You may approach the podium. I'm just making the announcement, yeah? Okay. Torreyway, Northwest London, Sunday, Chof Dalet Tammuz, the 4th of July. Harav Shimon Hella Shlita, Rebuilding from the Ashes. This week's Torreyway has been sponsored L'Rufur Shleimo, Shel Menachem Aharon Ben Cyril, Beruria Bas Chano, Yehudis Bas Kela, Sheyizku L'Rufur Shleimo, Bekorov, Besog Shochei L'Yisrael.
Shus Avi Meiri, Shus HaKol HaKodesh. After 20 years of separation, two loving brothers, Binyamin and Yosef and Binyamin, of course, are going to reconnect, and we're going to have that beautiful moment of the Yosef revealing himself, Ani Yosef. Now, one would imagine that that moment that Yosef reveals himself, he reconnects to his brothers, specifically his beloved brother Binyamin, we'd imagine that would be a moment of simcha, of joy, of such happiness, whereas in reality, it's a moment of tremendous pain and tremendous, tremendous tears. The Pasuk says, the moment Yosef reveals himself, it says, Vayitein es koiloi bivchi. Yosef starts to cry. The next thing the Torah tells us, Vayipol Yosef al tzavorei binyamin achiv vayefk, or binyamin bacha al tzavorov. Yosef falls on the shoulders of Binyamin and he cries, and Binyamin cries on Yosef's shoulders. The Pasuk continues, Yosef falls on the shoulders of all his brothers separately, individually, and he cries with each one. And then the Pasuk says, Vakol nishma beis paroi. The cry is so acute, it's so strong, it will travel all the way to the palace of Paroi. One would imagine maybe these were tears of joy, these are tears of simcha, mamish not. Rashi says, these are bitter tears of pain. And the question is, what is this crying? What is this crying? Rashi tells us that when Yosef falls on the shoulders of Binyamin, and Binyamin falls on his shoulders, he's crying Churban Bayis Rishon, he's crying Churban Bayis Sheni, and he's crying Churban Mishkan Shiloh. The Zohar Kodesh continues and says, when Yosef falls on the shoulders of all his brothers, he's crying the terrible Tzora of Golus Aseres HaShvatim, Shalamansa Melech Ashur, the terrible exile, the 10 tribes, he cries with each brother, the Golus Aseres HaShvatim. What is Vakol Nishma Beis Paroi? What is this cry that you can hear till the palace of Paroi? Says the Zohar Kodesh, this is, Koil Baromo Nishma Nehi Bechi Tamrurim Rochel Mavaka Boneho Me'ano Lehinochem. The cry of Rochel Imenu, the cry throughout the Doris of Atzoros, where we're all crying by Mama Rochel, be it the Holocaust, be it everything we've been through, the Inquisition, everything that went through our Golos, that so to speak, our tears are poured out by Mama Rochel. All these cries, all these tears, Yosef cries at that moment. And the question is, why now? Why now? You've got Tisha B'Av, you've got time. Yesh Esekol Chayfetz, everything has its time, has its place. At this moment, you just reunited your family. You've told them you're Yosef. You're reconnected to Binyamin. Why now? Why all the tears of the whole future? At this moment, they suddenly worry and they cry. Bayis Rishon, Bayis Sheni, Mishkan Shiloh, Golos Aseres HaShvatim, a cry, a Kol Nishma Beis Paroi. Why now? But if they cried at this moment, that means that this moment caused the cry. A number of years ago, on Tisha B'Av, I phoned into Kol HaLashon, randomly. And I heard a middle of a shir. I didn't hear the beginning, and I didn't hear the end. So I don't know who the speaker was, so I can't say it b'shem Omri. But I heard the middle of a shir, and he said the following vort. And this vort is emes la'amitoi, because I've seen the same yisod in many places, all saying the same thing, coming from a different angle. But this is what he said. And he says like this. Yosef HaTzadik pretends to be a vicious viceroy. His brothers don't realize he's their brother. He's pretending to be some Egyptian king. Says this person, if you look at the story, Yosef wants the brothers to reveal he's Yosef. He wants them to realize who he is. And he's throwing them hints the whole time. Just realize who I am. Let's follow the story. 10 brothers come to Mitzrayim. They come innocently to buy food. The next thing they know, they're all arrested. You're spies. And they're like, no, your highness, why do you accuse us? You are spies. Why do you accuse us of being spies? And the king says, you are all 10 separate people. You came in 10 separate gates. And suddenly you all gathered together in the middle of the city. What's the connection between you? Elamai, you're kushrik shorim. You're making connections. You're devious. You're spying against my country. You're swapping information. And they say, Your Highness, we are as innocent as anyone can be. We just came to buy food. So what's the connection between you? And they say, Your Highness, if you are like worried that we're joining together, if you see us connected one with the other, we can give you a very logical explanation. We're brothers. Kulonu b'nei ish echad anachnu. We're brothers. It's natural. It's obvious that brothers gather together. And the king says, oh, you're brothers. If you're brothers, then I understand. If you're brothers, then it makes sense. But tell me, says the king, are you all the brothers? Are you the whole family? Can I see a united family? Or is anyone missing? And they say, well, we're not really all the brothers. There's one in Eretz Canaan. And Yosef says, when I see a family picture, I need every brother. If there's a brother missing, it's not a united family. You can't be brothers if one's missing, if another one's missing. When I see a family picture, I have to see the whole picture. Bring me whatever other brother. Bring me the other brother. I want to see all the brothers. Yosef is throwing them a hint. He's saying, why do you feel you're a united family? Why do you feel you're all there? There's something missing. Understand, if all the brothers are not there, you don't have a family picture. He tried to be more oira than think you've got a brother. Yosef, he's missing. Think about him. Where is he? Try and reconnect him. Think, I'm somewhere. I'm Yosef. Think about me. And he's throwing this remez. I want to see all the brothers. The brothers don't catch his hint. They go back to Eretz Canaan and they come back with Binyamin. And they stand in front of him with Binyamin. And he starts to ask the most ridiculous questions. Anyone understands what a king was in those days? It makes no sense. Every alarm, red light should be flashing. They come back with Binyamin. And he says to them, tell me. You have to realize, this is a viceroy. He's a king of the world's most powerful country, Mitzrayim. It's the world's superpower. He's got millions of people who are under his control. Ill people, old people, people who need help, poor people. And these brothers come from Canaan. And the second they come, he's like, how's your father? How is he? I'm so worried about your old father. Is he alive? Is he well? I couldn't sleep last night. I was worried. Oh, come on. A king in Egypt is worried about an old man in Canaan. And nothing else to worry about. You don't have your own subject. You've got no one in your own country that needs any help. You're worried about some old man you've never seen in Canaan. It makes no sense. And he's saying, how's your father? Your father, is he okay? Is he healthy? He's throwing them Ramazim, I am this your father's son. Think about your father's pain. How's your father? He's my father. The brothers do not catch it. So he carries on. He said, I'm really, really sorry that I accused you. I can see you're a beautiful family. I can see all the brothers. And I want to make this up for you. I want to invite you to a suda, to a party. I want to make up the fact that I falsely accused you. You're all invited to my party. And he brings them to the suda. And the pasuk says, Tvoyach tevach v'hochein. Say Chazal, he shechted the cow in front of them. They can see it was a shechita kehalacha. Say Chazal, he took out the Gid Hanoshe. Do you know how complicated that is? And he's there pulling out the Gid Hanoshe from the back of the... Who knows about Gid Hanoshe? Gid Hanoshe is a tzavah that Yaakov Avinu got for his direct children. He's a viceroy to try pulling out the Gid Hanoshe. Honestly, he's screaming, I am Yaakov's child. I'm one of you. I've got the same halacha as Gid Hanoshe, Shechita. Realize who I am. And the brothers do not catch it. So he carries on. And he makes a party. And he sits them all at this suda. And what does he do? He puts six sons of Leah together, two sons of Bilhah, two sons of Zilpah, puts Binyamin by himself, and he sits down next to Binyamin. He couldn't scream it out clearer. Six sons of Leah, two sons of Bilhah, two sons of Zilpah, and he is sitting next to Binyamin like, screaming, it's me, Yosef. And the brothers do not catch. So he carries on, and he talks to Yosef, loud enough for everyone else to hear, and he says, tell me, my child, do you know why I chose to sit next to you specifically? And Binyamin says, no, I don't know why he chose to sit next to me. And he says, I can see in my cup through my astronomy that I'm very, very similar to you. We've got a lot in common. Tell me about your life. And Binyamin said, I had a very tragic life. And Yosef said, so did I. Tell me about your life. And Yosef said, I lost my mother many, many years ago. I wasn't brought up by a mother. I lost my mother. And Yosef said, me, the same thing. I also lost my mother at a young age. What's your mother's yahrzeit? My mother's yahrzeit is the same day. And then he says to him, what else happened in your life? I had a brother I loved and I've been separated for 20 years. I've also been separated from a brother that I loved for 20 years. And everyone, he's like screaming, I am Yosef. The brothers did not get the remez. So he carries on and he has him standing in front of a throne. But at one point, Yehuda gets angry. And when Yehuda gets angry, it's dangerous. And at that point, he's about to break out into a world war. And Yosef has no choice, but he tries one more time. And he says, okay, guys, you told me that you have another brother. Had another brother. Correct, your highness. Where is he now? He's dead. Are you sure he's dead? Yes. Did you see he's dead? No. We just know he's dead. And he said, what if I tell you that I can see in my cup over here that he's alive? He's alive. And the brothers say, really? Yeah. 1 minute, 1 minute, 1 minute. I can see these right now in Egypt. I want to know you're in the same country as your, so to speak, dead brother. And the brothers say, really? Yeah. 1 minute, 1 minute, get another SMS in. He's in the capital city. I want to know within a 20 kilometer radius is the entire family now. And the brothers say, really? Yes. Hey, I can't believe this. He's inside the palace. You should know that the entire family is in this building. He's inside the palace. And the brothers say, really? Yes. And at that point, he says, would you like to see your brother? And they're like shaking. Yes. So he starts calling. Yosef! He screams, Yosef, your brothers want to see you. Come, Yosef, reveal yourself. It's in a massive, obviously, it's in a massive hall. The king's up on his throne. There are loads of doors on all sides. And the brothers are looking in every direction to see which door is going to open and where Yosef is going to enter. And the king continues screaming, Yosef, your brothers want to see you. Come, reveal yourself. And the brothers are looking in every direction besides or opposite their nose where he's sitting facing them. Now, at that point, Yosef has no choice. Because the brothers didn't catch his hints. And he's forced to say the words, Ani Yosef. And with those words will come rivers of tears. Because the next thing that happens is, Vayiten es koiloi bibchi, he bursts out crying. And they cry all the tzoras of the future. Because Rabbi said, the moment that he said the words, Ani Yosef, at that moment was nigzar on us. Chum bayis rishon, chum bayis sheni, Churban Mishkan Shiloh, Godos Aseres HaShvatim, and all the Torahs that we've suffered till this day inclusive. Why? How did the brothers not recognize Yosef? How do you not recognize a brother? A brother recognizes a brother. With a beard, without a beard, with this size couple, with that size couple. A brother recognizes a brother. And if they did not recognize him, it means that inside, they were still had some machson. There was still some kinah inside. Because if you love your brother, you know he's your brother. And if there's no kinah and no sinner, you recognize him. And if the brothers did not physically recognize him, it means that internally, they were not yet there. And that senas chinam is the makor of all our tzaras. And Yosef knew that. And he was desperate to bring them to a point that they'll recognize him themselves. How can you not recognize your brother? And when the brothers did not recognize him, at that moment came all our tzaras till today, that senas chinam has still not been taken out of our system. The Medrash brings down, the Ramban brings down, the Sipono brings down. And he says as follows. Yaakov Avinu went through four tzaras in his life, four major tzaras, which were Esav, Lavan, Dinah, and Yosef. Those are the four tzaras of Yaakov Avinu. We went through four galuyos, Babel, Paros, Amoda, Yavan, and Edom. The four tzaras of Yaakov correspond to our four galuyos. Each tzara is corresponding to one galus. It's not just four against four. It's phenomenal. It could literally be a whole shiur because every nuance of the nisayonis that Yaakov Avinu has directly connects to every nuance that we have through the galus. It's phenomenal. If you study the two and you learn them, they are literally every holich yelech of Yaakov's tzaras in every dimension is exactly corresponding the four tzaras, the four galus that we went through in our galus. So it says the Medrash, so it says the Ramban, so it says the Zipporah, so it says everybody. So the four tzaras of Yaakov, which is Esav, Lavan, Dinah, and Yosef, is connected to the four galus that we went through, Babel, Paros, Amoda, Yavan, and Edom. We are connected to the tzara of Yosef, says the Ramban and the Zipporah. All of Yaakov's tzaras came from the outside. He couldn't prevent it. What can he do? He was born with Esav. What should he do? He's in his mother's womb with Esav. He's already bashing him up. He's born. What should he do? He's got Esav. He's got a deal. He's got to contend with him. He had no choice. The tzara fell on his head. What can he do? He has the tzara of Lavan. He has no choice. He has to marry a wife. He has to be the daughter of Lavan. He's got to contend with his father. No. He had no choice. Dinah. She's abducted from his house. What should he do? Yosef is the only tzara that who asked for this tzara. Who asked for this tzara? Yaakov comes back home. He's back in Eretz Canaan. He has his shvatim. He has his four wives. Esau's gone off to Har Seir. He's there. He's happy. He's got everything. Serenity. Klal Yisrael. Everything's going your way. And we brought the tzara onto ourselves. Nobody gave us this tzara. Kinas Achim. Kinas Achim. Hamolech Timlech Aleinu. Should you be our king? And because of Sinas Chinam, we created our own tzara. Who needed this? A self-created tzara through the tzara of Yosef. Says the Sipporah, that is our goddess today. If you know, just interestingly, the Makor of our goddess today. We are now suffering goddess Edom. Okay, since Rome took us out of Eretz Yisrael in the terrible exile, we have still been hanging around in the Christian countries. Adetzim Ayoyim Azeh. How did we get into this goddess? How did it start? We were living in Eretz Yisrael after the Hashmonai uprising for 103 years. We were a self-reigned country. No, Rome had no reason, no way, no havamina to make inroads into Eretz Yisrael. Rome and Eretz Yisrael, no sheiches. How did we fall into this goddess? Historically, there was a very, very good queen. She was called Alexandris. Alexandris had two children. During her reign, we were like on a high. We had an amazing period in Eretz Yisrael. Alexandris dies and she has two children, Hyrcanus and Aristobulus. And they vie for power. Why should you be the king? I should be the king. The Chachamim begged them to make peace. They said the last thing we want is war amongst Jews. The last thing we want is Melchemet Achim. They begged, they tried in every way to make a pshara between the two brothers, but there will be no peace. And one brother goes and he hires the Roman forces to fight the other brother. So he goes and hires the Romans to fight against his brother. And each one are giving other Jews as slaves to pay the Romans to fight each other. There's horrible stories in the Gemara. There are stories that sound like the stories Bizman Churban Beis Hamikdash, and they're 103 years before the Churban, during the internal fight of Jews against Jews, sieging against each other in Yerushalayim. I haven't got the time now to tell which stories, but it's not even the Churban. It's 103 years before the Churban. The two brothers fight each other. The end of the story is, who wins? Rome. The whole Hashmonai dynasty crashes out. Rome takes control of Eretz Yisrael. They put the king Herod on the throne. Herod is a Roman puppet. And the next thing you know, 103 years, we suffer terrible persecutions at the Churban and all our tzaras till today. All of our tzaras started because of Sinas Chinam. And that is what has remained. And that is the Mekor and the Yisod of our tzaras at that time. And nothing's going to change that. I'm not saying this I don't mean to misunderstood what I'm saying. Now. You know, I live in Kiryat Sefer. Every week there's another poster why Mashiach hasn't come. One week is because of the shaitels, and until we get rid of the shaitels, Mashiach is not going to come. One week is because of the internet and the phones, until we get rid of Mashiach is not going to come. One week is because, this is not in Kiryat Sefer, in Meron, because we don't know enough Torahs of Brezhnev, and we learn that Mashiach will come. One is because you don't know, every week there's another post of why Mashiach hasn't come. Now, I'm not Chalila discussing right or wrong virtues or merits, but the fact is, 100 years ago, there was no internet. And 100 years ago, there were no shaitels, and Mashiach still wasn't here. The only tzar that we've had that's taken us from the Churban at Etzim Hayoyim Azeh, unfortunately, it's Sinas Chinam. That's what caused the Churban, and that's the only tzar that has been through from the beginning until the end. You know, we like to think of Poland before the war, and how beautiful it was, and the Shtetl Eden, and the Kedusha, and it's all true. But if you read any storybooks from before the war, there was a village, there was a Rav, there was a Shamash, there was a Sheikhet, and there was a Machlokes. It was every single village. That's how it went. There was a major wars on the Hasidus, and each one against the other Rebbe and the Fashmutz. It's unfortunate. Our history is dripping in this. Sadly, tragically, it's the story of our history. I heard a vatel. It almost sounds like a vatel. I heard this vatel from Rabbi Arya Eliashiv. Rabbi Arya Eliashiv is a grandson of Rabbi Eliashiv. Not the Gub of Rabbi Eliashiv, who's a famous Rabbi Arya Eliashiv. It's a different grandson of his who davens in my shul. Mamash a choshev a choshev yid. And he told over a vatel again, a vat, in the name of Rabbi Eliashiv. But since it comes from Rabbi Eliashiv, it gives so much power to this vat. Rabbi Eliashiv was known that he learned halacha lemaisa. Rabbi Eliashiv mahalach, he was a poisek. Halacha lemaisa, he did not like pilpulim. That was not Rabbi Eliashiv. He didn't like pilpul stam. He learned alibud hilchasa. So although the vat I'm going to say is a vatel, but being that it comes from Rabbi Eliashiv, it gives it so much more power and credibility, so to speak, in how much we can take out of this vault. Again, although it sounds like perhaps a bit of a chassid shemalach. But this is what Rabbi Eliashiv said. The Medrash tells us a story that happened during the Churban Beis HaMikdash. And the Medrash says as follows. You know, Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim, was the most regal, powerful country in the world. Bnei Yerushalayim were shining, they were beautiful, they were clever, charismatic, amazing, amazing people. Nobody believed they could fall. They were the Arazim, they were the cedars of the world. No nation believed they could ever conquer that majestic city. But it fell. And when it fell, says a Medrash, there's like a slave trader. And he's walking down the road and he meets his friend and he says, "You're never going to believe it. I got an Eved, a slave from the Shevi of Yerushalayim. This slave of mine, there's nothing like him in the world. He is charismatic, he's good looking, he's tall, he is special, he shines like the sun. My Eved, there's none like him in the world." And the other one said, "I should be impressed. I've got a maidservant from the Chevy of Yerushalayim. My maidservant, she sparkles like the moon and the stars. She is so attractive. She's so this. And he says, "Ah, you're stump saying because I talk." No, really, really, I've got a shifra. And he said, "Look, if you've really got such a shifra, and I've really got such an eved, let's marry them to each other, and then our children will be like the sun, stars, and moon together. They'll be like dazzling children. We'll sell them. We'll make loads of money." Fine. They take the eved and the shifra. They close them in a dark room, massive room. And they say, "Listen, you've got to get married, and we're going to take your children." Says the Medrash. The whole night, the Eved is standing in the corner of the room with his face to the corner, and he's crying, "Bechit Amorim." And he's saying, "Do you know who I am? Do you know who I am? I'm the son of the Kohen Gadol, the grandson of the Kohen Gadol, Mizera Aaron HaKohen. I would have been the Kohen Gadol myself had it not been for the Churban Yerushalayim. I'm from the most miyuchas families in Klal Yisrael. I'm the most miyuchas." Now, he knows this girl's a Jewish girl, right? He knows that, but who knows what family she's from? Who knows where she's from? Who knows what she is? She come from any stum Chvesnish family. I'm going to marry stum a girl. I'm going to marry stum somebody. It's an embarrassment to everything my parents stood for. I can't just marry stum a Jewish girl. I should marry a girl who's going to be like a granddaughter of David HaMelech, something royal, regal, Kehenet. I should, stum is a butcher to everything. How can I just be stuck with this stum random Jewish girl to marry her? The girl is in her corner of the room and she's crying and she's saying, "Do you know who I am? I'm a daughter of the Kohen Gadol. I'm a granddaughter of the Kohen Gadol. I come from the most prestigious family in Klai, so I'm supposed to marry the best Bach and Ponovich. I'm supposed to marry the best Yichus, whatever it is. And I'm going to marry some random Bach. It's a butcher to everything." And they're both crying and crying and crying till the morning. Comes the morning and the sun shines through the window and they see each other. And when they see each other, he sees, "You're not stomach girl. She's the daughter of the Kohen Gadol." She sees him. "He's not stomach. He's the son of the Kohen Gadol." They were brother and sister. Says the Medrash, they fell on each other's shoulders and they cried and cried until they died. Says Rav Eliashiv, why does the Medrash bring this story? I want you to know something. You go to a library today. There are thousands and thousands of Holocaust books. Thousands. The Churban is a Holocaust. If we would write the stories of the Churban, we would have bookshelves full of stories. If the Medrash chose random stories to tell us, then they're not random. Then these stories have all got a very direct message to what happened in the Churban. If the Medrash chose this story, because there are plenty of stories that happened. If we'd have time, we would see other examples. But every story in the Medrash got incredible lessons. Why does the Medrash choose this story? Says Rabbi Yashiv, I want you to know something. Says Rabbi Yashiv, night is goddess. Okay, light is Msama goddess. Light is day. I want to know what's goddess, said Rabbi Yashiv. When everyone stands in his corner and says, "Do you know how choshev I am? Do you know my yichus? Do you know where I am? And I've got to marry that person. I've got to be in the same shul as that guy. I need to live as a neighbor to that guy." That is goddess. When a person can see the sunlight and see the virtues of the other person, then you can have a morning, then you have dawn, and then you have gola. As long as the person sees his virtues and the other person is in the shadows, you cannot get out of this goddess. Only when you can open the sunlight and see the other person's virtues can you get out of this godless, can you have a gula. Look, every single person has strong points. The problem is that we know our own strong points and then we judge everybody against our strong points. And that is a very unfair judgment. For example, let's say that I'm very, very makbid on Twitter. I wish I was, but let's say I'm very, very makbid on Twitter. And I'm there in shul 20 minutes before davening. I've got my tefillin on. I say korbanos, mamish benachas, or beruiga. And there's this guy who comes in every single morning a minute before baruch. It eats me up. Like, I've got davening the same shul as him. He ruins my tefillis. Hashem's angry with him, and then he's angry with me as well. And anyway, this guy, I go, I'm not davening the same shul. This guy just, it's true. But my strong point is tefillin. This guy went and donated his kidney to somebody. Let's go see you donating a kidney. Life is not about looking at your strong point and his weak point, because then we stay in this goddess. But actually, we want to get out of it. We've got to find his strength. You know, I know an Avrich in Kiryat Sefer who told me the following story. He said to me like this. He said, he lives in a block full of Avrichim. And there's one guy there, he's working at Balabas. And he said, I wasn't very impressed by this guy. He said, I wouldn't put 2 shekel on him. I don't agree with his way of describing. I'm just telling you his story. And then he didn't look up to this particular person in his block. But he said, one thing that like drove me nuts. This guy. Every single Erev Shabbos. So by asking Kiryat Sefer, the siren goes off 30 minutes before lighting. Okay, before Shkia, 30 minutes. So in theory, after the siren, you haven't been Mechal Shabbos till 30 minutes. This guy said, my neighbor, every single Erev Shabbos, summer or winter, irrelevant. I can act time my clock by him. A minute before the siren, or 2 minutes after the siren, look, I'm screeching like I'm a sugar with his car, jump out of his car, run upstairs, every week the same day. I'm walking out to shul, ready with my children and this mashugana, every week with the siren, last minute, like times it to a T, comes crashing in, running upstairs like a mashugana. He said, it drove me nuts. Like, okay, you want to work? Work 7 days a week, 6 days a week, work. You want to work Friday, work. Stop a chatzos. You don't want to stop a chatzos 2 hours before, an hour before Shabbos with the sign. We're not talking about chilo Shabbos, but come on, a bit of a feeling for Shabbos. He said, I mamish looked down at him. I would walk out of my building, I would say, good morning, I'm a tzaddik. Good morning, good morning. And I'd say good morning to him. He's kalkal the whole block. Ad Sheboy Hazman, he said. And this Avrich's father became very, very, very unwell. I knew his father well. His father was my Rosh Kedel. He was a tzaddik. Unfortunately, he was unwell freely. So when his father became unwell, he was introduced to a new world, and a horrible world we should never know, only for simchas. The world of hospitals, the world of nebuch, medicated, the world of hospitals. And his father could be there for months. And it's always a question, will his father be home this Shabbos? Will he not be home? A Shabbos with the family was so special, and it was something which unfortunately was very rare during that terrible heart kufa. So when I entered this new world, I found my neighbor. And then I understand why he comes home a minute before Shabbos. Because this neighbor went to Ezer Mitzion, and he said, I want to do something for Klal Yisrael. What can I do? Give me something. I want to do something for Klal Yisrael. And Ezer Mitzion said, look, we've got lots of things we do. We give cakes, we prepare food, we bring parcels. But there's one thing that we need, and nobody's prepared to volunteer for this. Remember, people in Israel do not have cars, okay? It's a whole different dynamic. Sometimes there are people in hospitals, and within the hours before Shabbos, the hospital say, you know what, he's well enough, he can go home for Shabbos. He's well enough to go home for Shabbos. Sometimes people in hospitals. Do you know what it means? These people, like the children, they can go home for Shabbos, but they just can't go home. There's no transport, they cannot get home. And we need somebody to fit in that gap, but nobody's going to fit in this gap. And the guy said, on me. This guy, every Erev Shabbos, for 3 hours, is going from hospital to hospital, bringing people, taking people. I want to tell you something. Okay? I am a Yekka, born to a Yekkish family. My father always says, we don't travel after Chatzos on Erev Shabbos. I'm petrified Shabbos. I can't say I don't travel after Chatzos. Erev Shabbos is a bit smaller than England, but I give myself time. I once had to be in a seminary in the Neve campus for Shabbos. I came to Neve campus, I'm in the seminary, and a girl comes running up to me and she says, to Rabbi Heli, she says, my brother's just gone into Shaarei Tzedek Hospital. She said, I have to be there. There's no family. There's no one. And I can't get a cab. It was 5 minutes before the siren in Yerushalayim. Now, I'm not allowed to take a girl in the car. It's a rule in seminaries. But my wife was with me. So if I take my wife with me in the car, she could sit at the back. She said, will you take me? I never travel 5 minutes before the siren. But her brother's in hospital. So I said, you know what? The roads are going to be empty. I'm going to fly to hospital. I'm going to drop her off and fly back within 15 minutes, 10 minutes after the siren. You got half an hour to shkia and my last night. She gets in the back of the car, and I leave Harnoff. Traffic. I don't stand it. I can't traffic. I'm sitting there. I've never done this before. I'm working with Shabbos. I hear the siren out the window. I get to Shaarei Tzedek. I drop her off. I say, you know what? I'm going back via the highway. That was a mistake of my life. Because once I got on the highway, there was traffic on the highway. Now, you can't turn off the highway. You can't leave your car on the highway. I was shaking. I pulled off the highway. We flew out of there 10 minutes before or whatever. It's the last thing I'm going to volunteer to do. This guy, every single Erev Shabbos, every week, is busy taking people through the traffic with all the lachats to get them home that they can spend the Shabbos with their families. And if that means parking up his car at the entrance of Kiryas Sefer and walking half an hour, he'll do that. And if that means being stuck in some yeshuv for the whole of Shabbos, he's doing that as well. But in the meanwhile, his neighbor can't look at him because what is he? Why did he need his father to become ill after many, many, many years to be able to appreciate what this person was? You know, it's always like that. If the Oisha tells us Tzokhadi, he's about Gaiva. If he doesn't tell us, it does give some. It's always that. We can always put a person in a dark light. Yidna got Cheskes Kashrus. Yidna good, amazing people. Says Rabbi Yashiv, our job is to put the light, to put the sunlight onto them, to realize their incredible, incredible, incredible virtues, rather than put them in the dark shadow and to look down on other people. I finish with one last thought. The Gemara tells us that a Yid called Reb Tzadok, who fasted for 40 years, he fasted for 40 years for Yerushalayim, fasted for 40 years for Bnei Yerushalayim. Chazal say that Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai said, had there been one more person like him, Yerushalayim would never have fallen. If Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai knew if there'd be one more person like him, Yerushalayim would never have fallen, why was he not that one person? Why didn't he fast for 40 years for Yerushalayim? And the answer is, it's not if somebody fasts for 40 years they can prevent the Churban. It's that Reb Tzadok felt so acutely the pain of Yerushalayim that he wasn't able to eat. It's not that he decided to fast. He felt the pain of Kalei Torah. He was not able to eat. Rebbe Yechon Zakeh didn't reach that level, but Haraya, he ate. The Gemara, the Medrash tells us, there was a woman called Marta Vaspaitus. She was a very, very wealthy woman. She was sitting on a throne. She told the Eved to go and buy her delicious food. And he went to the shuk, and by the time he came, there was no food left. The whole story that the Medrash, we haven't got time, just a punchline. She was walking through the streets, and she saw the fig of Reb Tzadok HaKohen. And she was so Reb Tzadok. She sees a fig, she steps on the fig, and she's revolted, and she becomes ill, and she knows she's going to die. She runs home, she takes all her wealth, all her money, she throws it in the street. She said, what value has my wealth? What value is my diamonds? What value is everything I've got? And she's, so to speak, in the ghetto, trapped in the siege against Yerushalayim. I'm going to die of starvation. I'm revolted by this horrible fig or whatever, dig the fig. And she throws all her money, and she'll die. I always had a kasha. Reb Tzadok fasted for Klal Yisrael. He fasted for us 40 years. One more person that came would have saved the whole of Klal Yisrael. How is it that a Jewish woman is killed through his date? Without time, he used to suck the date, he threw whatever. She stepped on his date. But how can a Jewish woman die through the date of Reb Tzadok? He's supposed to save lives, not kill lives. Reb Tzadok, he gave up 40 years of his life caring for Klal Yisrael, davening, caring, fasting. And here's a woman who, while there's a siege against Yerushalayim, a multi-millionaire, she's sitting on her throne and asks her Eved, go and buy me delicious food. And when she will finally see that she's going to die, she goes into her palace and she throws all her money and says, what value does this have now? Why are you only throwing your money now? What about 3 months ago, when you still had money, but the poor people in the ghetto were starving in the gutters? Why then did you not throw them your money? Why then did you not go and give them and realize and feel an achrayus for Klal Yisrael? When she passed the date of Reb Tzadok, there was a tremendous kitrug. Look at Reb Tzadok and look at her. Rabbi said, Golus is when we close to ourselves. Ge'ul is when we take the bright picture and we care for Klal Yisrael and see the entire nation and worry, Bezrat Hashem, we should be zeicha to Yeshua's G'dayis Meher V'Yameinu. Amen.